to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 70. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me. We are in Atlanta for UFC 201, Lawler versus Woodley. And it's good times right now because I'm telling you, we got a couple of special guests in the building. First up, Fiasco Jones, a.k.a. Marty Anonymous.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes, we will get into this man's role in just a second. And then off in the distance as well, our man, Isaac. I like to call him Isaac Kennedy because the dude is definitely...
Dead ringer.
Definitely Tim Kennedy's long-lost cousin or little brother.
Maybe a nephew.
Something.
Yeah.
Got to be related.
This man is definitely related to Tim Kennedy. All right.
You guys are getting Ancestry.com.
I should say we are kicking things off at about 2 o'clock in the morning here, so that should let you know we're roadshow ready.
Woo!
We are roadshow ready. That's how we do. But it is good to have our man, Marty Anonymous, a.k.a. Fiasco. I don't know how long I'll be able to keep that up. The only person, by the way, in the world that I know that has a louder voice than I do.
That's right. I'm on high right now, people. Not high plus.
He's not high. He's on high, which is a setting on the mixer. Just to clear that up, you know, I don't want anybody coming after Marty Anonymous.
Could be high. I'm not sure.
He might be high.
I didn't spend all day with him.
He was
talking about some DMT and some weird UFO shit earlier.
Ayahuasca. So. I was with some folks, and they just said, hey, they poured down some ayahuasca, and I was like, let's go trip.
Who knew?
As far as I know, you're not real. You're figments
you're not
of
actually
my
here.
Imagination. Yeah.
You're not actually
the ayahuasca
in Jones.
Culture was so strong here in Atlanta.
I didn't even. It was just some random. He said, here, drink this ayahuasca, and I, you know, I'm just.
So do you drink random things that people just bring up to you?
I do, because that's how you live, Kenny.
Yeah.
I should say that we are here in my hotel room. We are at the Hilton Atlanta, not the Host Hotel, which is the Sheraton Atlanta, because we can't exactly afford that on the MMA Junkie budget and the MMA Roadshow budget. So we had to stay a block away, very, very close. Now, Fiasco Jones, that you have seen the interior of both places since you are staying at the very luxurious Sheraton, how bad did we do here? Are we?
Oh, you're definitely doing all right. I mean, you have twin beds, which is, I think, an all-time low.
I should say this is my room, not both of our rooms. I will say we do have enough budget that me and Cole Coffee don't have to share a room, thank God.
I still sneak in here at night, right, regardless.
He's got a key.
Fair enough. But this isn't too ghetto. We're all right compared to the Sheraton over there.
Yeah, I would say, well, yeah, sure.
Okay.
I mean, you've got four walls.
Yes, we're ghetto. Yeah. Good to know. All right, by the way, some of you long-term listeners like our man Isaac Kennedy over here will know that our man Fiasco Jones, a.k.a. Marty Anonymous, is the owner of the greatest story ever told.
That's right, people.
Now, tonight is not the night that he will tell the greatest story ever told,
but
he has promised us that on episode 100 – he will tell the greatest story ever told. I will say that I think when he promised that, we were on around like episode 10.
There was no certainty that it would last beyond like 20 episodes. It seemed like a fair bet.
And when we ran into him this week and said, by the way, we're doing episode number 70 this week, there was a look in your eyes.
I went pale. Like, wait, you said what? No, can't be. I think they're honestly padding it. I think some. I'm gonna go back to the logs on iTunes.
In fairness, that doesn't even count the half episodes and a half the bonus episodes that we do. We got.
See, that's where I know
we can hold your feet to the fire, my
friend.
Well,
no, that's where I know you're padding it because you're probably taking full episodes, just chopping off a little piece here, chopping off a little piece there. Look, we got more episodes.
They're full episodes. It's funny. I just saw Isaac Kennedy go check the front door because he already could tell. You folks can't tell the volume level that is already. So at some point in the night, the door will be knocked on and we will be warned.
Yeah.
So let's just see. So let's start the clock. Let's start the clock now and
smooth
see how long.
Smooth jazz. Let me ask you guys, how is Atlanta treating you so far? Because I will say that myself and Cole Coffee – it is Thursday night / Friday morning as we record this, as it always is. We've had a great time in Atlanta so far. We have had the most friendliest homeless people show us around town today.
Yes.
On two separate occasions, we have been led to a destination. Homeless people have seen us looking at our phones, obviously having no clue exactly where we're going, looking for directions. And I will say, I'm just going to say it right now. Atlanta has the friendliest homeless people I've ever seen in my life.
Exactly. What should normally be start off as the scene of they'll never be seen again ends up where you need to, you go to where you're supposed
it's
to.
It's crazy.
Yep. They were very, very helpful. The first one, I'll be honest. The gut check. I thought when we're trying to get into the arena and a gentleman is trying to lead us down into a train station that looks nowhere near like where we're going to go, it seemed like it would be a bad decision. But all you know, truth be told, it was like some backwards way, and lo and behold, there we ended up on the back of the loading docks and right near where we needed to go.
I'm not going to lie. As he was leading us, and basically I never said a word because I was like, this is not a good situation. But Colt Coffey, being the loving, trusting gentleman that he is, was like,
from
sucker.
It's Midwest.
Sure, buddy.
It's the Ohio upbringing.
Show me where we need to go, my friend. Thank you so much.
I see trust in your eyes. I see you have to be your man of the streets.
He did. I lingered about 10 to 15 feet behind as we were leaving. And on the one hand, I thought, I've got two options here because we're totally going to get jumped.
Right.
And what's going to happen is either A, I'm behind so I could potentially leap on the back of the assailant and drop in the rear naked choke. That was option number one.
Yeah.
Option number two, which I was kind of leaning towards, was like
– fell further back.
Yeah. I'll be far enough away that I'm gone.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm safe.
And, yeah, the muffled screams become less and less. And you'll be gone.
No guilt. Those screams will not live in my mind.
Of course not. They'll be too far away. It'll just be like, what was it? Was that the train track screeching? I don't know. It's not Kenny dying.
And then it happened to us again on the way to dinner tonight.
It did. We walked out again, and a gentleman noticed that we were looking at our phone. He said, where are you going, guys? I thought he was coming in with
just
his
curious.
Leftover food.
I
he was coming into the hotel.
Hotel.
I thought
he
was a guest. But no, we soon found out that he actually stays behind the hotel. I think you asked him if it was behind the staircase or underneath
on the staircase.
On the staircase.
Because he just referred to over there.
Yeah, it was kind
staircase.
Of ambiguous. But yes, and rather than just point, like in any other city in any other place in the world, when, oh yeah, just take a left here and go up the street. No, here, let me show you. He
kind,
literally,
man,
kind people, walked up the street. And he was kind enough to invite himself into dinner with us, and I politely had to decline, but I thanked him very, very much for actually walking up there.
I want to say, because I don't want to sound like total jerks here, we were very kind in return to all these people.
Yes.
I wish I had a lot of money that I could just hand out. I mean, I think the fact that there are homeless people walking the streets of Atlanta giving directions to people is terrible, but I can't
I prefer it. To just saying, give me something, though.
Well, that's true.
Yes.
I actually I think that they found the workaround where it's they're actually providing. They're actually saying, like, I have a service. If you want to transact for that,
they're giving of their time.
Yeah,
and you give a little.
I'm always a fan of people who are walking the street offering transactions for money.
I'm just saying, there's different breeds, different kinds of. You know, street peddlers, perhaps?
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Well, they have been very kind,
merchants.
And I wish I had more money to hand out. Unfortunately, I don't. Now, those of you that don't know, Fiasco Jones, a.k.a. Marty Anonymous, is a UFC employee. Now, anybody listening to this podcast that happens to be working for the UFC would struggle to identify exactly who this gentleman is. Because
not a person.
Normally, I have put effect on his voice. There's an effect on his voice.
I don't sound – this is not my voice.
Yes.
Absolutely. You know what I'm saying? You thought – you were like, this guy's voice is so identifiable. But what you don't realize is not only is there an effect
– like serious processing, multiple layers.
It's
layers and layers. Like the CIA can't crack this.
My real voice is practically inaudible. And what they've done with this – masking is that you can actually hear me.
In fact, it's bizarre, and I'm, you know, maybe I shouldn't say this, but Fiasco Jones is actually a female.
Yes.
That's right. Exactly.
And
I
that's
do amazing
how good
work.
The voice masking is.
I do amazing work. We probably shouldn't have said he was a female.
You know
now
what?
I mean, now you've just basically.
Now I feel bad. I've eliminated half of the people
exactly.
You could be.
I mean, well, not even half, because there's not that many women in the UFC. I mean, let the witch hunts begin.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Well,
thanks, guys.
Since we have you and we were able to load you full of gin, which also doesn't identify who you are, who prefers this woman who works for the UFC, who prefers to drink gin, Hendrix if available, but will settle for Bombay Sapphire when there.
Really any gin.
And really, the way you muddle the limes is...
not particular to any one person.
Not particular to
most
anyone.
Most gin drinkers do that to their,
just,
to their
just
limes.
Just murder the lime inside the drink.
Yeah, you've got to.
All right. Since we were able to ply him with alcohol and then bring him over here, not even frosty beverages, just clear beverages,
yes.
which is amazing. Help us see behind the curtain. I know. Look, I don't want you to do anything that's going to put your job on the line. Obviously, we're all buddies.
But I'm taking my headphones.
I kind of want you to get the axe.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. You got one foot out the door anyway. and besides, at episode 100, you got 30 weeks left, basically, is what I'm saying. Because
days with your number,
make
when
the
greatest story ever told is told in public, it'll be over. So, I mean, you got 30 weeks left anyway. But, I mean, just give us a sense. First of all, I guess you, as an employee, I mean, I know you well enough, young lady, that as these reports were coming out, you know, I mean, everybody in the company was like, I don't even know what's true, what's not true. You know, when it did come to you that the UFC had been sold for $4 billion, I mean, I guess, how did you guys initially find out? I mean,
exactly.
Other than the reports.
Cold Coffee called me and said, hey, by the way, guess what? you know what's happening right now? I'm like, what?
Other than Flow Combat and MMA Junkie.
Number one source of MMA news, MMA Junkie, people. They'll be kind enough to call you personally and say, hey, by the way, you just got sold. What's your reaction? What? My kid's asleep. What's going on?
I mean, we know for a fact, of course, we did report that you guys did get an email that said, we're not sold right now, which I guess technically was true because the transaction wasn't done yet. And I think the other thing was that report, the initial report, said the Dalian Wanda Group, which was the Chinese-led
right.
group, which is how the UFC can stand behind that email and say, look, we told you we weren't sold to the Dalian Wanda Group. That's true. We weren't.
Right.
We were in process of being sold to WME IMG. So when it did come out, I mean, did you guys get another email? Was there a staff meeting? I mean, how did it go?
There was a staff meeting. There was a staff meeting after the fact. I think we found out the rest of the world did. I would be hard pressed to find one person that was surprised though.
Right.
Like because the lead up.
It was so out there.
And it was getting more and more specific. The tone, the mood was always very calm because, honestly, even though I'm a high-ranking official, female official in the UFC.
The highest female-ranking official we've ever had on this
right.
podcast.
That it's still kind of the day-to-day operations. You know, we had just gotten out of, 200, and we still have a load of shows to go.
Right.
And on the ground, nothing's changed, and everyone realizes that, we just got to move forward. And I would say I wouldn't say morale has changed at all. I think morale was always pretty fairly high, and it's kind of remained there.
Well, that's kind of interesting you say that because I've seen, people talking, I've heard morale is down. And obviously, Cole Coffey and I interact with a lot of you guys, a lot of UFC employees. And, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and I haven't sensed that so far. I mean, I can understand. I mean, there's always probably got to be a little bit of tension. Like, I hate to say it, but, I mean, some people will probably lose their jobs. Some people will. Not right away. Some people will. Just anytime companies come together, like you realize, hey, this person and this person do the same job. But I don't think it's going to be as many people as people think. Like I kind of get the feeling that if WMEIMG is coming in and spending $4 billion on something, they at least want to keep it somewhat as is.
Right. And that's my same kind of thought process as well. But the longer this timeline runs, obviously becomes more of their property. And their choices become, they're going to make choices, actually. Right now, they haven't made any choices.
Right.
So we haven't really felt what their plan is. And I wouldn't say it's complete optimism, but it's not like negative. I'm not pessimistic about it either.
Right.
I'm just kind of neutral because I'm kind of like, well, let's just see. Let's just see where they're going to go. It is different. I don't know what to anticipate. So, but I just know that, like you said, they bought something that they wanted, and they want to make it bigger and better. So, we're the best at doing that. So it makes sense that they're going to keep at least some of us.
Yeah.
Maybe most of us is what I'm actually thinking.
I think so, too. I just don't think you come – we've talked about it a couple times. I think, obviously Cole Coffey is a former USC employee. Me as somebody that's seen the company very close. I think most of the people stay. I think there's going to be people like – and I hate to pick on a division, but I've always picked accounting, just because that sounds like a.
I love accounting.
I know. They are good people. I feel like there's going to be there are people that can do accounting from other companies. You know what I mean? There's going to be stuff that does overlap, but I feel like anybody that's involved in production operations, feet on the ground, doing the thing, I I feel like they're all safe. I don't feel like you would come in and be like, dude, we know how to do what you're doing better than you know what you're doing.
Right.
And especially in an industry so specific.
Exactly. And, again, the longer that timeline draws out, there's no idea what that could be. They could find other possibilities of doing all of our jobs. But, yeah, I just don't see it because, again, like you said, we're very specific about what we do. We are specialists in this field. So you like if we're going to say like I'm going to trade you out for company X and like they do all these
like
other
things. A video production company.
Right. They do all these things, but we're going to like make them do this too. Guess what? That's probably not you're probably going to be getting some maybe inferior product or maybe who knows, you know, I don't know.
But you never know. I mean, cuz haven't you guys already started when it comes to a lot of the promos, a lot of the ones they're doing that out of house now. They're using a lot of third party. I mean, because when you think about it, when an entertainment company, if they just want to,
are done in-house.
Well, all right. Well, a lot of the shooting of it, though, the companies that shoot it aren't those still like companies? Because I know they were doing trips out to L.A. because that was the whole big thing about when Connor and he didn't want to come for his presser because they had this company that they had hired out in L.A. to do these promos and things of that sort.
Oh,
I mean,
those are those special high
dollar. So that's what
ones.
I'm just thinking. Like
those are like those
but those,
big.
Yeah,
budget
but
ones.
Again, like 90% of all the promos are done in house.
Right,
and the creative. I actually think some of the creative that actually is pitched to these guys is done in our group as well.
True.
I think that they're they may be the ones that execute, and I don't know. Maybe they actually.
True, but also when you think about like it's not like the UFC invented video editing, or promo editing or anything along those lines. So there's. You know, there is some thought, there is some worth to the fact that they
you
could.
Talking so much about our female employee about video.
Well, no. I'm just saying.
I don't know fucking shit.
I don't even know what she does there at the actual company. But I'm just saying, you never know.
You guys did get some, we saw it. I can't remember who it was. It was a fighter that tweeted, and I didn't see. But the WME ING sent out an email to everybody that's on the ground right here in Atlanta inviting you guys to.
Synergy, man. Synergy.
An esports thing that's going on Friday night?
Right. Yeah, Friday night. I actually think that's an interesting development that we're actually now – because that's one of the first signs you get that we're part of something bigger. You know, that now their partners, they're inviting us to see some of their other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of feels cool. That feels real cool. Whatever your opinion is of esports, I think it's pretty interesting myself because, I don't know, it's one of my things. But
Gamer girls are hot.
Yeah.
So hot.
But just the fact that they're actually kind of opening us, like opening the doors for the rest of the group, because you're saying like, hey, you're part of this family now. That's cool. And that's like that's one of those positive developments where it kind of thinks, you know, it takes some of that edge off. It takes a little bit of that kind of like maybe some of that pessimism. Ken's constant trolling for they're going to fire you.
They might be showing you the people that are going to take your job.
Right, yeah.
Come meet the e-gamers that are going to take your
Chuck
job.
Chuck Conley.
It's funny. Ben Folks actually wrote a nice piece, I think this past week. It may have been the week before, but it was about this. And he talked about he talked to some people that were involved in, like, the PBR. You know, they bought the Professional Bull Riders. The WIMG owns the Professional Bull Rider series as well. There was a particular bull rider. I wish I had his name handy right now. But it was a great piece. And it talked about this guy that he got injured, couldn't continue to ride anymore. But they actually helped him cross over to basically a modeling career. And they got him some magazine covers and things like that because – they have so many connections
right.
in so many industries that they can open so many doors.
And that's actually on the same level that you're talking about right now. I kind of also see that the same kind of idea in that it's not maybe – they made it – it's probably not the way to see it is closing doors, but you're now part of this group where you have now possibilities to venture out into these other things. Say, for instance, you were a video editor and they have –
it's a random
they
occupation
have,
to pick.
Yeah,
it's a random –
And they have several production companies or ad agencies. Maybe there's a possibility of, like, stepping into those. Who knows? I don't know. But that could be a possibility.
So the glass ceiling might be open up now. Now you have
exactly.
a whole other avenue.
Just like Hillary crushed the glass ceiling, maybe WME IMG has crushed it for small people that may – produce videos.
I forgot to tell you, not only is our guest a female, but also a small person.
Yeah.
A small.
But a big feminist at heart.
Let's talk about UFC 201. All of us are here to cover UFC 201, work on UFC 201. Fiasco Jones, a.k.a. Marty Anonymous, You obviously work behind the scenes and spend a lot of time with the fighters. Who have you spent the most time with this week? Has anybody left an impression on you? You know how I always say this. I mean, none of us can really, you know, say for certain who's going to win, who's going to lose. That's a great thing about this sport. I mean, even, you know, you look at our crew at MMA Junkie, our staff picks, you know, the leader is at like 65%. You know, people that are down below are like 61%. I mean, we're all very close to each other. But, like, at the bottom line, us as quote-unquote experts are picking like two-thirds of the time. So that's the great thing about this is the unpredictability of it. But has anybody left an impression with you just as a human being, as a person, or like you got a feeling about a fight because it's just a vibe around them? Who has stuck with you this week?
Obviously, I can't pick because that's not my thing. But as human beings, I talked to Nami Yunus and Kavalkevich for some reasons.
Right.
And I thought those two just seemed electric this week.
Yeah.
I honestly, if you've watched any of those embeds, Nami Yunus is – she has that she's Thug Rose.
Of course.
But when you watch those embeds or see her, you know, back behind the scenes, she just has this kind of glow about her. And I feel like she's really – just kind of really has a bright spot, you know. And same thing with Kavalkevich. She's a little more shy, you know. She's a little more reserved, but she still seems really positive and you know, having a good time.
I agree. I think that fight, I don't want to say it's flying under the radar a little bit because it's not. I think this whole event's flying under the radar simply because there were so many events. I mean, we're coming off this run of these massive events and massive fights, and of course, UFC 202 is lingering on the horizon. Everybody's looking forward to that. But I do feel like the whole event is kind of flying under the radar a little bit, but Rose and Carolina, first of all, it's a big fight in the division. I think the winner gets a title shot. I really do. Now, whether either one of them can beat Joanna and Jacek, I don't know because Joanna is a beast. you know, there's a big fight coming up in a couple of weeks between Jessica Andrade and Joanna Calderwood that I think probably factors into the title picture as well, but I think this fight really probably is a number one contender fight. And I agree. I think both of them have a little bit of a star quality. I mean, Rose has been out there for a long time. She's been
– Yeah, Rose definitely has that spotlight.
She gets it. And yeah. And I think she's such an interesting character because, like, I mean, I think coming off the Ultimate Fighter, even though she didn't win the title, I think she was the most popular fighter coming out of that. And, you know, her destruction of Paige VanZant, I mean, that was – I mean – it was a destruction. I don't like to say that very often. I mean, that was domination. That was incredible. She's shown all these capabilities, but, like, I also get this sense that she's not entirely comfortable with this whole thing yet. You know, like, being a star, being a celebrity, that, you know, just the whole thing about her cutting her hair and that to her just being like, fuck it, it was in my way. I didn't want to see it anymore. And people are like, look at this feminist, you know, message. Look at this icon. You know what I mean? Like, right. And I kind of feel like she's still a little bit uncomfortable with that attention and all that. But I feel like she's a star. And then Carolina, she comes in 9-0, undefeated. Probably, though, to be honest with you, relatively unknown to most people. But, you know, her English is good. It's not. I wouldn't say 100% fluent.
Right.
But it's good. She's definitely got a little attitude, a little flair in front of the camera. Like, there's something about her. She has a little bit of that X factor, but not really known yet. An all Polish title fight, I gotta imagine, you know, if she could win and face Joanna would be amazing in Europe. So I don't know. This fight is really, it's really intriguing to me for a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I would agree. And I actually, kind of going back to, Carolina, or actually I would almost say like all fighters, you just reminded me of this, is that like, you see them in the best light, or you get to know them most when you're not talking about fighting.
Mm.
When you see them outside of that world, because I was just thinking, because when I was speaking to Rose earlier this week, at the end of the conversation, I kind of spun back to, I don't know if you've watched the embeds this week, but
definitely I thought the interaction with them in the hallway was hilarious.
Yeah, she's been going to this sushi bar or sushi restaurant. And, like, she's going there multiple times. Like, and every episode she's at this. So I actually asked her about that, and she's just, like, laughing and having a great conversation. And that's when she really lights up. You know, when you talk to her about, like, what's your opponent this? Where's your advantage there? It's kind of like, she knows it, and she actually gives great answers. But that's not where, like, she kind of, like, that's what I do.
Right.
That's work. but like who I am. When you see, I guess when you see that star power, when you see that the real personality, the real potential of where she could be as a kind of maybe like a front, a face mm-hmm. for the division. That's those moments, and it's when she kind of steers that back into like let's because we obviously have to sell fights and talk about fights. When those two combine, you're gonna get some amazing stuff.
I 100% agree with you. It's funny. I hadn't really thought about that as her being like a face of the company. I think maybe kind of a reluctant face of the company. Like, I don't think she's – again, I don't think she's not Conor McGregor that's like, show
right.
me the attention.
She's not asking for it. She's just kind of getting it.
She just has that X factor.
Right.
It's just there. I agree. I'm really excited about this fight. My staff picked – I pick Rose Namajunas. Man, I think her speed, her transitions – are tough, but Carolina's is no joke, man. She's the real deal as well. I think it's going to be a good fight. Main event, Robbie Lawler, Tyron Woodley. Good main event for sure, no doubt about it. Big fight in the welterweight division. Robbie, as you certainly know, not the most, outspoken guy in the world.
Really, no.
I think, you know, it's funny. And you think about to the Strikeforce days when he literally fell asleep at a press conference, which is the most – hilarious image and thought ever, but he's been okay. But I'll tell you what, Tyron Woodley, I'll be the first to admit it. I was not necessarily thrilled when they announced his fight. I didn't think Tyron was necessarily the number one contender, but he's selling me, man. He's selling mm-hmm. me, and I ended up for my staff pick, which will come out Friday later today when this is released. I ended up picking Tyron Woodley, and I mean there are some technical reasons behind it. Number one, he's a very fast starter. And Robbie Lawler is not a fast starter, so I think Tyron has a real opportunity to catch him early. So there's that. You look at the time away that Tyron has had, and you say, well, maybe that's a drawback. You know, he's had this time away. But in the meantime, Robbie's been through some wars, man. So maybe Tyron's body is a little bit better off right now because he has that time away. I mean, we talk about the timing that you get, the cage rust or whatever. I believe that. I think that's very real. But meanwhile, Robbie's been putting himself through wars. Tyron's been resting his body, feeling better. So, I think about that as well. And, you know, I also think, too, that Robbie, for all the incredible fights he's had, part of the reason that he's had incredible fights is because they've been close fights. Right. It's not like he's just been going in there like Mike Tyson on some dudes. You know what I mean? Like, no, he's been going in there in these battles and edging people out in these incredible fights and getting some finishes. I mean, of course, the Rory McDonald fight was amazing. But, you know, you think about the fights that he had with Hendricks. I mean, those were close fights. The fight that he had with Condit, very, very close fight as well. And so I'm kind of leaning towards the upset. And Tyron has been interesting. I mean, he's been walking around with this air of confidence. You talked about the Embedded series. He's going right. to – see Fast 8 filmed. I mean, it's interesting. Have you had much chance to spend time around either one of those guys?
Not this week. This week, our ships have not passed. So, yeah, I've been actually hanging out with some guest fighters, strangely enough. So I haven't really touched any of the main event.
I look forward to seeing the guest fighters because there's actually a pretty good crew in town. Cole Coffey, you saw Tyron Woodley today who –
rare form, that's for sure.
He brought in the Marshawn Lynch, basically, in that – every single question that we asked him found some way to say, I'm the best welterweight.
The best welterweight ever in the world.
I'm surprised, though, that that encourages you that he's, like, ready for the star if he's going to give you the Marshawn Lynch.
Well, that's not it. But let's take a sec because if you hadn't heard this, you need to hear this.
Being the best welterweight in the world.
All right.
Have you kind of gotten a chance to look around Atlanta, hang out in Atlanta a little bit?
Oh, not really, but Saturday I'll get to show them the best welterweight in the world.
Are you the best welterweight in the world?
Yeah, I am the best welterweight in the world.
So how come you didn't win last time?
This will be my first time fighting for the world title, and I'll show you I'm the best welterweight in the world.
You guys
want to
ask anything?
I got all I need right there, man.
Sound like you're getting much more
anyways. Well, Tyron, I mean, you've been planning for this fight for a long time and planning for this moment for a long time. Now that it's here, what does it feel like compared to what you expected?
It feels great to show everybody I'm the best welterweight in the world.
Love it. You've had this confidence about you. I wonder, is it something that you know that we don't know, or is there any concern that maybe there's overconfidence at this moment?
Sometimes the lights just click and you realize you're the best welterweight in the world.
Love it. Love it.
Tyron Woodley giving us the Marshawn Lynch there. Now, to your point, female known as Marty.
Non-video editor person.
I don't know what that is.
That wasn't what gave me confidence, but I thought it was funny. I could tell the local media today. We always love local media stories.
They were not too happy with him.
They were not happy. They hated it, right? They hated his shtick.
Yeah. She was already nervous enough, and then when she was trying to get something from him and he just kept doing it, she got to this point where she was just frustrated, dropped the mic, and was like, turn around. She's like, well, do you guys want to ask him anything? And at that point, we're just kind of chuckling. We're just like, this is awesome, you know? I mean, to see a fighter really have some personality, and to knowing where Tyron, you know, when you've seen him different other weeks, this was just different. I hadn't seen this side of him so blatantly just having fun with it. And you could even see it because right before, you'd start phrasing a question to him, John, and I'd see this little corner of his lips already start curving because he's already thinking, like, how am I going to work it in? You know, it was almost like he had a bet with somebody, like, how many times? Every time I say this, you owe me, like, $20 or something. You know, so right now somebody owes him a lot of money because it was nonstop. It was hilarious. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sold on it. You know, I think we've seen guys go in there and they really talk themselves up, and that's what it eventually becomes, that it's just the talk that they needed to kind of keep themselves amped up. I think you're right. I think Tyron's going to come and he's going to come in refreshed and he's going to come in looking good. But I don't think anybody's ever going to say, Tyron, man, I can't wait to see how good he's going to look in the fifth round, because he never seems to make it to that point.
Yep.
And I think the thing about Robbie, yes, while he is a slow starter, he is still just – he's like granite. And I think when Tyron comes out and he's going to come out firing hard, we've seen Robbie get really, really rocked in the beginning, but he always gets back up and he always can kind of maintain it. And I see it happening again. And I would probably still lean on the champion holding on to it. But Tyron has as good a chance as anybody. He's as explosive as anybody else out there. I mean, I think he has that air about him when we were thinking about Anthony Johnson and that explosive power, that if he comes at you hard and he really hits you, he's going to take anybody down. I think Tyron has that. But right now he's coming up against a guy that has proven himself to be as tough as anybody out there, as taking punishment and then turning it around and weathering out the other guy. And I think we're probably going to see that. Do I think it's going to go to decision? Probably not, but I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be more surprised that Tyron was able to make it to that point and that, you know, Robbie wasn't able to finish him. So it could happen, but I would think that Robbie's going to get the finish before the fifth.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Again, I'll admit, when it was announced, I wasn't looking that forward to it. Now that we're here, we're on the eve of it, I see Tyron Woodley. I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
And let me share with you what did sell me on it. It was a phone conversation I had with Tyron Woodley last week, actually, before we made the trip out to Atlanta, where he started putting a little bug in my ear, a little something out there. So as we re-up on the frosty beverages here late Thursday night, early Friday morning in Atlanta, Georgia, listen to Tyron Woodley. Mr. Woodley, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. It's good to talk to you. So let's just get into it, man. This opportunity, I mean, I want to say you kind of rolled the dice a little bit, man. You kind of held out and said, you know, this is the only fight I'm going for. Talk about that process, man. What made you be so steadfast, and were you worried at all that, you know, you were going to get passed over?
You know, I mean, it didn't really go exactly like that, but, you know, since I'm getting that MO, I'm going to just roll with it. And I was just like, you know, forget this, guys. I'm not taking no fight. Unless it's a world title, I'm just going to sit here, and that's how it's going to go. So I'm going to just take it like that. Actually, to be quite honest, it was quite a bit different. I think the UFC, Joe Silva, read an article that basically said that if I had the chance to wait, would I wait? And I said, if I had the chance, then yes, I would wait. It would be silly to risk, you know, so many tough matchups in the welterweight division. It would be silly to go out there and risk it when you know you're going to, for 100% sure, get this title shot. So I think that was basically misinterpreted, that I would not fight. So a rematching of me and not a rematch, but actually rescheduling of me and Johnny Hendricks never happened. That's how Wonderboy got that fight, because they assumed I wouldn't take the fight, so it was never offered to me. But you know, I don't sweat the technique. I'm still in the same spot, fighting for a world title, whether you know, I told him, heck no, or, you know, it was a misunderstanding. Things happen for a reason, and I just feel like it's destiny that I was in this position and in this moment.
I think fans sometimes maybe don't understand, like, what a difference it makes. And I'm not asking you to talk, you know, actual dollars and cents or whatever. I know that's kind of private. But can you give us an understanding of kind of, like, why it would be worthwhile to wait? Because I see guys saying, well, why don't you just stay busy? I mean, if you win again, you'll get a title shot. But I've heard people say, like, listen, you know, this could be like a $1 million decision or not of whether or not I fight. So, I mean, how important is it to get that title shot, and why is it so important that you say, I've got to hold out when I'm in the right position?
Well, I sure the hell wish it was a $1 million decision. that would be a nice payday, but it's definitely six figures, multiple six figures difference. So when people say that, I have to take a grain of salt. They're not signed with the UFC. They don't understand how our contracts work. That by me just fighting for a UFC title, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars different immediately, without even winning the fight.
Right.
So for me to put myself in a position, like, if you can name me a fighter or a fight matchup for me or any welterweight in the top 15 in the world, that's an easy fight. Like, I can't find one. You know, I look up and down the roster, there's no easy fights there. So why would I risk for less money and not the gold against somebody that's just as tough, if not tougher, than Robbie Lawler? When I can fight him, I can show that I'm the best in the world. I can win the UFC title. I can make more money, and I can put myself. That's the end goal, right? That's what we all do it for. We do it for the gold. And why wouldn't I want to fight for that? So it worked out for me. No matter how it came about, I'm excited for this opportunity, and I look to, you know, seize the moment about a week from now.
Talk to me about your preparation process, because obviously, you know, the most important fight of your career, you want to be as dialed in as you can. But I wonder, how do you balance it? Because, like you said, this is a huge fight, a huge financial opportunity. You've got to be as healthy as you can. So how did you approach this training camp? Was it, I've got to train harder than I ever have because it's a title fight? Or was it, I got to be very careful in the way I train because I've got to be healthy and ready to go for this title fight?
You know, when I was younger, man, when I first, you know, started fighting, this is like 2006, I said, man, when I get to fight for the world title in the UFC, I'm going to train so hard. Everything I've ever done, I'm going to do it times three. And I just mentally had this picture of what the training camp would be like, just crazy moving cars and just, you know, all this nuts stuff you see on the internet. But when I got in that position, it don't take that much. You know what I mean? It don't take for you to do things that you normally wouldn't do. It don't take for yourself to put your limbs in jeopardy of injury just to go out there and say, okay, I did all these extra training sessions, or I did strength conditioning, then I boxed, then I sparred, then I grappled, then I did this, I got no sleep and rest. So my training camp has been very, very well monitored through Dean Thomas and Duke Rufus. The schedule has been on point. They pushed me when it was time to push. You know, I've been told, hey, that's enough, we're done for the night. And I want to do a couple more rounds. And I finished my sparring yesterday, and I just sat on the mat. And I was just sitting there with a blank stare on my face. And I just realized at that moment, I'm ready. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
I don't have to be ready 4 weeks before the fight. Or, you know, I mean, 6 weeks. When somebody come up to me like, oh, you fighting Robbie, you ready? I can say, no, I'm not ready. But guess what? I ain't fighting him for another 6 weeks. I don't have to be ready. But I just stopped and I just thought about all the different work we put in, all the different runs, all the different strength conditioning, the sparring, the training, the mitts. When I was tired and I chose to push through it, I'm like, I'm ready. And that's a great feeling to have, man. You know, when you're prepared and you're willing to let the dice roll and go out there and let it all hang out, man, I can be in no better position right now.
That's awesome. Let's talk about the fact that it's Robbie Lawler. I mean, this is a dude that's been around forever. Obviously, you guys weren't in the same division in Strikeforce, but you've been seeing him fight. And, of course, you know, he's a legend of the sport. So, I mean, what does that add to it for you? I mean, I know the title is everything, but does the fact that it's Robbie Lawler, does that kind of hype you up even a little bit more, kind of a legend of the sport?
It doesn't hype me up to make me, you know, any more motivated than I am. You know, there's nothing that Robbie possesses, nothing he can do to make me any more motivated than I already was to go out there and show that I'm the best in the world, to change my family's life, to put myself in a position where I'm realizing my goal and starting my legacy. It does make me, you know, prepare in a different way. You can't prepare for Robbie Lawler the same way I would prepare for Damian Maia. You know, Damian Maia is not coming and trying to knock my head off my shoulders. You know, he's trying to get me to the ground and break my arm.
So with that said, I like the type of urgency. That's the same type of urgency I had when I was preparing for Johnny. It made me get up for training. It made me get up for practice. The same preparation I had for Carlos Condit. You know, just knowing what those guys are able to do, watching their fights. Man, and first of all, I'm fans of these guys. You know, he is a legend. He has been around, and no athlete in the history of our sport has had a better comeback story than Robbie. I mean, name me one fighter who's had a better comeback story, from a 500 record in Strikeforce to being the top guy, you know, at the age of 19 and 20 in the UFC, you know, coming short, going to a different organization, now coming back and actually winning a title. And looking better now than he's ever looked. I'm fighting the Robbie Lawler that's the best Robbie Lawler he's ever been.
What does it do for you? I mean, a fight's a fight, man. I've never been in a fight, but, I mean, when you go in there, you're putting your body on the line. But seeing the wars that guy has had his last two times out, I mean, do you have to do something mentally to know I might be going in there for 25 minutes of hell?
I might be knocking them the hell out. That's all I think about. I'm serious. It's one thing to look at someone that's been in these wars, and also look at what happens when the war happens. Where are the guys standing at when they're taking this damage? They're standing right in front of his ass.
Right.
They going back and forth. You hit me, I hit you. You hit me, I hit you. And it's a who's got the bigger underwear? That's the contest they're having. You know, that's never been Rory McDonald's game plan. Now, as a fan, God dang, it was one of the best fights I've ever seen in my life, and I was standing up to my feet. And as a spectator, man, they really put the division on the map. You know, that's going to be a fight that goes down in history. But as an athlete, Rory McDonald would never be the same after that fight. You know what I mean? Yeah. Ever. And it probably cost him the fight by going into Robbie's game and standing in front of him. Carlos Condit, in my opinion, was winning that fight, and controversy could have won that fight.
Mm-hmm.
But not until he stood still and stood in front of Robbie that he started receiving that damage that probably gave the judges, you know, edging him over in that fifth round. So with that said, you can choose not to engage into that type of brawl, and you can choose to engage on your own terms, though. You can brawl with Robbie on your own terms. Johnny Hendricks did it very well. If you watch Johnny Hendricks, when he started punching in with a leg combination, leg kick, inside kick, or takedown opportunity, he did very well against Robbie. But when it was time for Robbie to blast back, if he wasn't there to get hit, he suffered no damage. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's the first fight. The second fight, he stood there, or he hung on the leg too long, or he was just in arm's reach, hand fighting too long, and he was getting cracked with shots.
Yep. Interesting, man. Well, it definitely sounds like you're confident, man. So I guess, I mean, as you visualize this thing and play it over in your head, I mean, how do you see it going? Because it definitely feels like you think this is setting up to be your night.
You know, I've been visualizing this fight so many times. I fought Robbie so many times in my mind. I visualized so many different ways of this fight going, me winning. I can be honest, man. You know me. I'm not a guy that's going to make some shit up, and I'm not a guy that's going to be, you know, I've had daydreams of me losing fights and me visualizing something and the guy overwhelming me and I can't get out of it, or a guy put me in a move and I can't get away, or a guy not, you know, me hitting him with my best shot still coming forward and I not want to deal with it. I've had those visualizations, and I'm honest and I'm okay with that. But every time I visualize this fight never goes five rounds. And I never lose this fight. I finish it so many different ways. Like today I was overwhelmed on how many different ways I can stop the shot, how many different ways I can get off the cage, how many different ways I can take the person down, how many different ways I can put the person. I had to take a moment because I was overwhelming myself because I've given myself so many different options. So with that said, I just feel like I'm going to win this fight. I don't know how. I don't know if it's going to be a gutsy decision. I don't know if it's going to be a knockout or submission, but either way it go, I visualize myself getting my hands raised so many different ways. Now I'm just excited. I'm excited to see how it plays out, and I can't wait. I can't wait till next week, man. I'm definitely ready for this fight.
That's awesome, brother. All right, man. Well, I know you got a bunch of these, so I appreciate the time. Any other last thoughts, messages, anything like that you want us to get out there?
Yeah, don't pick the wrong person this time. You're gonna lose your money. Make sure you pick your pick right. I already cost you a Macau.
You did. You put me on blast right there in front of everybody. All right, Tyron. Good to talk to you, man.
All right, brother.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Tyron Woodley. He sold me. I don't know if he sold you. Speaking of whether he sold you or not, I just want to say, if you're liking what you're hearing, go on iTunes.
Yes.
Just subscribe to us.
Do it.
Rate us. Review us. Cold Coffee, I haven't even shared this with you. You could be like our man, Jason from Arizona.
Oh, yes.
Who logged back in this week and said, let me start by writing that my original post was misguided. After the last podcast, I realized I am that jerk known as the internet troll. While I stand by my criticism, the one star was wholly unfair. You can still get on my nerves, but you're a nice guy, and I'm still listening, so that means something. It was a bit disingenuous to go to the gay co-host reference when you've done the last several podcasts with the Brazilian gal. My previous comments are more in line with joke podcasts like MMA Tour. Well, I don't know what he's talking about, so they don't. Best of luck, and sorry for any consternation. I'll disappear into the background again. So, Jason from Arizona.
See, I still like him. I liked him after that last one. I like him even more. I said I liked him because I was busting your balls.
I know. I like.
Thank you, Jason. You're a good dude.
Jason from Arizona admitted he was a little emotional on the internet, came back, and essentially issued an apology. Still said I can get on his nerves, but
let's be honest. You get on everybody's nerves at some point, right? It's just – that's normal.
That's
right?
True.
It's normal. But, hey, I'm – it's normal. Anderson. Where did Anderson come up all of a sudden? Oh, he just ran out the door again.
Walked in the door. Oh, damn it.
Anderson. But, no, that's good. Well, and the main thing – that's a great thing about it, and I'll let you finish talking with this, that – that's what we love about it. When people chime in, tell us what – I mean, this is growing. It's forming itself. We love the feedback, whether it's good, bad, whether you hate us, whether you love us, but we love the fact that you're sticking around and that we're all growing and we're doing this together.
We read it. We listen to it.
So thank you, Jason. I love it. And hope that cools down a little bit in Arizona, because I know they've been burning up out there.
No doubt. Well, speaking of somebody that stuck around, we found out that our man Isaac Kennedy – not his real last name, but I will just say this man, especially from the profile, it's the profile. This man is the spitting image of Tim Kennedy. This is definitely part of his family. Like you said, Ancestry.com. There's something going on here. This guy has Tim Kennedy's
grandpa was like
Morgan,
in the area.
Morgan's
like a post office.
I'm just telling the listeners right now. He's up in the night.
He has been listening since episode number one.
I should say the listeners. I'm like half your audience, right?
Exactly.
Like it's me and your mother.
It's me and my mom. Yeah, it's you and my mom.
And Jason from Arizona.
And Jason from Arizona. Yeah, so one-third of our audience is here with us tonight, which is huge. This is big to me. But you did the right thing. You showed up. You drove in 4 hours to get here to Atlanta because you're coming in for the weekend.
And
let's clear that.
Not for the podcast.
Not for us. He was coming to see a friend.
showed up with a case of frosty beverages. Yep. He even made sure he was on brand with the Bud Light.
Right.
Although we did hear that he looked for the PBR, and unfortunately,
I was looking for the PBR. It was a conflict because I was like, the UFC they've got a Bud Light thing. Also, my roommate, this is a weird thing. My roommate is a Budweiser rep, and so I know if I go to Atlanta and then come back and tell him, yeah, I brought these guys PBR, he would just be all
that would not be good.
Ass.
Oh yeah, beer reps do not appreciate
that at all.
Well, let's talk about the evening that you've had, my friend, because told us a couple days in advance that you were going to be showing up, and I said, hey, man, as we always say, if you're a Roadshow listener, come on, we'll hang out, we'll do it. We'll have a couple frosty beverages, we'll do the podcast, you know, we'll meet up around this time. As it turned out, as you showed up, there was news breaking.
Yeah.
Justin Scoggins didn't even come close to making weight, unfortunately, and had to pull out of the fight, which I think – sucks, because I got to say that Justin Scoggins and Ian McCall was a fight that I was really, really looking forward to. And you got to you got way more than you bargained for, I'm sure, as you got to kind of tag along a little bit. And you came with us to go interview Ian McCall, kind of hung out there, watched that whole thing unfold as he was cutting weight in the park.
Yeah.
So this evening, a little more perhaps than you bargained for.
Yeah, it was fun, man. Like I've been a fan of McCall I'm not a longtime MMA fan, but I found Ian McCall and I was a fan of him. And yeah, it was interesting because I came in and I was texting you, John, and I was just sitting in the Hilton lobby, and I'm thinking, well, I might as well catch up on the news. And I open Twitter, and I see the text, and I'm like, oh, he's talking to Justin Scoggins. Oh, I wonder what that's about. And I open up Twitter, and it's like Justin Scoggins is pulled from the event. Like, oh, that's what he's going on about. All right.
Crazy night, man. It's I should say, our man, the magnificent one, Steve Morocco, actually gave us a heads up and said, listen, man, he's not here right now. He's out in Oregon getting ready for his wedding. And he's like, listen, I'm hearing some stuff. It sounds like Scoggins is going to be up. That's why he's the magnificent one.
That's absurd.
This is what he's hearing. He said, I know you guys are on the ground. Try to follow up if you can. So we said, all right, let's go to work. Let's follow up. We start texting, and we start reaching out to everybody we can. And finally, we actually get in touch with Justin Scoggins. And I should say, when the initial reports came out, he was actually kind of wandering around town. He was still walking around the streets of downtown Atlanta in a tough position, knowing that he was way overweight and that he probably wasn't going to make it. And Cold Coffee, I mean, you and I were talking about what can we do because, you know, our work day was kind of wrapping up, but we knew we had to keep following the story. But it was kind of a unique position because we don't want to force the guy's hand. I mean, technically, I mean, this is way before tomorrow morning's weigh-ins.
Yeah.
He could wake up at any time, change his mind, and decide he's going to try to make weight. So this was kind of an interesting position.
Yeah, because, you know, you're torn because you're in one aspect, you're like, wow, this is great. This guy is going to give us stuff that's immediately relevant. It's going to be exclusive. It's going to be breaking and all this other sense. But also, too, as fans of the sport and – you know, from me being on an insider where it was, you know, just branded into my brain, the last thing we want to show is a bad side of a fighter. The last thing you want to do is do anything that they're not going to be able to come back from or say whatever. So ultimately, my initial reaction was like, should we try to talk him into to keep going, to kind of keep pushing, you know, like tell him, no, don't really talk to us because once you talk to us, it's done. The decision's done. You can't really take that back. And even when we went into the room, that's kind of one of the things you reiterated to him, like, hey, you know, like, are you sure? Like, are you sure what's going on?
Yeah, because we had already started seeing some tweets saying the fight was off. And even with Justin, we had kind of talked to him via text, and he was kind of suggesting the fight was off. But technically, the fight's not off until 10 a.m. Friday morning. As I said, we're still – it's getting close to 10 a.m. on Friday morning. But but technically, the fight's not off until 10 a.m. because he could literally have a change of heart at 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m. It was like, fuck it, I'm going to try to make weight, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were very careful about saying – you know, and that's a hard position to be in because a lot of places were reporting the fight's off, the fight's off, the fight's off. We definitely knew that the fight was probably off.
Yeah.
But you can change your mind and you can decide you're going to make weight. And it was kind of a unique situation because we didn't want to press him too far and be like, hey, give us the interview, commit to saying you're out of the fight because you could always change your mind.
Yeah. And I think if anything, I think he recognized that. And I think that was one of the reasons why I think we've been lucky enough to have relationships with these fighters. The fact that, you know, we've never been one, and I'm proud to say I've never one to just like, oh, let's just go get that quick hit story and be done with it. You know, I'd rather build a relationship and keep things open, keep things legit, you know. And really, I want these guys. I respect fighters, and I know you respect these fighters.
He's talented.
At utmost, and he's super, super talented. The last thing I want to do is enable him to do something that he's not really fully sure that he wants to do. So I was glad that we did that, and I was glad that he reached out and even said, he's like, you know, you guys have always been good. I trust you guys, you know. And you gave him a platform to say what he wanted to say, and it was a tough decision. You could tell. I mean, he it's not that any fighter ever wants to do something and upset the UFC, upset his fans, and I think that was one of the things he was upset because he knows a lot of people are pulling for him and want to see him because he's a very exciting fighter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was great that he was so honest and he was open and he was just telling about it. And, you know, you could see in his face that, you know, it was a tough decision that he had to come by. But when your body is fighting you and you know that it can only get worse if he pressed the matter and he came to a tough decision. And I love that he was so honest and was like, here, let me just tell it rather than just hide and say, no, I'm not going to talk to media. I'm not going to whatever. He faced it forward and straight on. And I respect him completely for that. A lot of people might hate on the fact that he did fail. He maybe didn't judge his diet right or do whatever. But I mean, you see him, the guy was in shape. He was whatever. I think eventually maybe he's just getting to a point where his body's like, enough's enough. I can't do it anymore. And we just happened to be able to see it. But to hear it firsthand, it was it was kind of emotional. He said, how can you not be when you're sitting in there, you know, I'm sitting alongside his, you're in the room, they're welcoming you in there, and then to see his face and see his reaction, see him have to deal with it, you know, when he's got his loved one in the room and for support and all this other stuff, it's tough to not get caught up and get sort of brought up in that whole emotion of it. I'm even thinking about it now. I'm just like, I feel for the guy, you know. I loved seeing him fighting. I was very, very excited for that fight, and I'm kind of bummed that it's not happening. That the news we had to break was the fact that the fight's not happening.
Yeah, know? Justin was kind enough to invite us up to his room, gave us an exclusive interview that we could put out there, where we just, again, like you said, just gave him a platform, let him tell us what he thought from his side and his own words. So here's what we got.
All right, well, we're here with Justin Scoggins, and really there's just no way to easy way to put it, I guess. I mean, we were on the eve of you fighting Ian McCall at UFC 201, but the bottom line is that's just not going to happen now. You had to make the call, not going to be able to make weight out of the fight. Tell us just kind of how you're feeling right now.
It's a pretty crappy feeling, you know. I've had to pull out of fights before because of injury. This is the first one where you got to pull out because of it's really safety issues, health issues, you know. So, you know, it's definitely, I understand my body and I understand the growth of it and what I need to keep myself healthy, so to speak. But it's definitely just sucks for the fans, because I know the fans were looking forward to it. And I was looking forward to putting on a show, and you try to come to an agreement, but you know, maybe do a catchweight or do a bantamweight fight. But business is business, you know. I have no animosity towards Ian. You know, he's just handling it like a business, like a smart person would. So, you know, we just kind of go back to the drawing board. We go up to a more natural weight class, and you know, you pick up and go from there.
It's funny because I saw you a few hours earlier today, and at the media session, you kind of brought out, you know, hey, after this fight, I'm thinking about maybe I'll go to bantamweight. So I'm guessing this is something that's not, you know, just happening right now. Is this a move that you've been thinking about, and has this weight cut been getting harder for you as you've been getting older?
Yeah, man. Actually, dude, when I was a sophomore in high school, I wrestled 135 pounds. That's what I wrestled when I was 16 years old. And when I started, you know, I've won world championships kickboxing when I was like 17, 18 at like 140 pounds, stuff like that. So, you know, the weight cutting thing, it started becoming more prevalent in my later years as a professional in MMA, just because, you know, everybody tells you, oh, everybody's doing it. It's almost like peer pressure, you know. And you do it once and you kind of feel that strength over the smaller men, and you know, it's definitely a good feeling and stuff, but it catches up to you, and it's not good for certain people. It's once you're too big for a weight class, you're too big for a weight class, and you gotta assess the situation and do what's right for your growth physically, especially being, you know, I'm 24, so I know I'm still growing, and I want to maximize that growth. I don't want to mess my body up, and I want to be healthy, and I want to give the fans good performances, 100% performances for, you know, as long as I can.
Can you say, I mean, how far off were you, and I mean, how close did it come, and what was it that triggered you to say, I'm just not going to be able to make it?
Well, I get my body fat percentage monitored just to make sure that that I'm healthy and at a healthy weight, and I was getting down to like the 3% body fat, like close to a 2% body fat margin, and you know, I'm out here in Atlanta running around, putting in like 8 miles, you know, running, so it wasn't really sweating at all, and you know, it was just kind of getting in my head and getting my head just flighty and loose and stuff, and you know, no more sweat coming out. So yeah, I mean, there wasn't anything, there's nothing left to cut, you know what I mean? And so I talked to my managers, I talked to my physicians, and we tried to get a catch weight or a bantamweight fight. You know, we tried to let them know early enough, but like I said, it's business is business, so didn't work out. So we'll be 135 from now on.
And I guess to be clear, I had heard you were still at like 132, 133. Is that right? I mean, you still had quite a bit. It's not like you were just a pound away and like, I can't do this anymore, right? I mean, there was still quite a bit to go.
Yeah, and I actually, like, I did a couple sweats, try to get a couple sweats in this morning, and I couldn't get below about like 132.5, I think was the lowest I could get. So I was trying to get below that. My body wouldn't let me get below that. And I hadn't had a meal in like 2 days, you know what I mean? You know, you're running really low on water and just no more fuel to go, no more fuel to burn, you know? So it sucks, man. But you live and you learn.
So definitely making it official. You're moving to bantamweight, moving forward. Never going to try this again.
Yeah, absolutely. Bantamweight's where it's at. You know what I mean? I don't ever want to have this feeling again. I don't ever want to crap the fans out of a good fight. You know that sucks. But I'm definitely going to be back as soon as possible, you know, and get back in there and give them hell at 135.
Nice. And I guess ultimately at the end of the day, you just want people to know that this was a safety concern, right? I mean, we talked about it a little bit before we had a chance to turn the camera on. I think your long-term health was really the ultimate guide in you making this decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 24 years old. I love martial arts. I love the art of this, and I do it because it's fun. And I like to give the fans 100% Justin Scoggins, you know. And for a while now, it's been really hard for me to give everybody 100% of myself because I've been giving a lot of my energy into a weight cut that, you know, it eats your muscle up, it eats your brain up, and, you know, I've dealt with concussions in the past, so I don't want to do anything to myself that's going to last forever, last a lifetime. I plan on doing this for a long time, and I want to do it the smartest way and the healthiest way possible, and I advise everybody, you know, if you're going to cut weight, make sure you do it the right way, and you know, if you're skilled enough to where you don't need to cut weight so you can fight smaller men, don't let anybody convince you that you need to do that. You know what I mean? You do what you feel is right. You fight at the weight class that you feel you compete best at, and, you know, you go from there.
Well, I know this is a tough time for you, so we won't take too much of it. I imagine you want to rehydrate and deal with things on your own. But any other last thoughts or messages that you'd like to make sure the fans get or that you want to send out there?
Yeah, everybody, you know, just I appreciate all the support and the continued support. So, you know, I hope to be back in here really soon. Y'all get to the UFC, get to all the guys that work with the matchmaking stuff and let them know that y'all want to see me back in there at bantamweight and y'all are excited to see me in there because I'm excited to give y'all a show and sorry it didn't work out this time.
So Justin Scoggins says it right there. He's moving up to bantamweight. I will say this. I mean, if there's a silver lining, bantamweight division – pretty damn exciting. Justin Scoggins, I thought he was doing great things at flyweight, but Justin Scoggins moving up to bantamweight. Isaac, dude, he's going to be a force there.
Yeah, that should be fun. I mean, I don't know. I haven't been following Scoggins that closely, but what I have seen of him, he's exciting. He's exciting if he works his way up the ranks. Exciting striker. Bantamweight's hot right now, man. You could match him up with almost anybody and get a pretty damn decent fight out of it.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do with them because there's no doubt. I mean, I hate to say this, but there's no doubt the UFC is going to be upset with them. I mean, this is a card.
Yeah.
This is a card that had already taken some hits, you know. And
yeah.
I think a lot of people were really looking forward to Scoggins and McCall. Now it's taking an additional hit, and you know he explained it very clearly. You know there were health reasons behind it. You know that's what this was all about, but at the end of the day, you sign a contract, you're supposed to make weight, and so they're going to be upset with them. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with them because not that the matchmakers can be vindictive, but, you know, they can play some games, man.
Yeah.
They, you know, what will they do with him next? Will they give him a no-name opponent so that it's a terrible fight that nobody cares about and they bury him on the prelims?
Maybe they'll feed him to Lineker.
I was going to say, will they give him to somebody that they're like, oh, that guy will definitely kick his ass. You know what I mean?
Like,
what will they do? So now this is the point where we met up with Isaac after we finished talking to Justin Scoggins. He did say, like, hey, listen, I'm hanging out in the lobby of the Hilton. I'll be the guy with a case of frosty beverages. We showed up and
looking
there was
like an idiot with a case of Bud Light wearing a Rockhold shirt and a black hat. Jesus.
But it was very appreciated. And then we said, listen, man, we're not quite done yet. We're not quite ready to do this podcast just yet. Will you tag along with this? And you were kind enough to say, yes, I will hang out with you guys go work along. And we went to go see Ian McCall. Now, we took a trip. We had to jump in an Uber. We went to a park. It was called Hurt Park. I tried to get the Uber driver to drive to Hunt Park.
Yeah, that was not it.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well. We almost got kicked out. I became slightly passive aggressive for a moment, but I caught myself.
Pam,
yeah, I got a glimpse of Pam. That was fun. Like, it's less than a mile away. I'm like, oh, hey. Who's that sitting in the back? Is that Pam?
Yeah. Yep. See?
Yeah, Hurt Park. Hurt Park is a part of Atlanta I've never been to.
It's a tiny little square.
Might as well be an intersection.
It basically was. To me, it was like there was just like some grass that they never quite created in an intersection. So they're like, well, hell, we'll just call this a park.
Yeah, put a sign up.
But Ian McCall, Francisco Rivera, a couple of their training partners and team were all there, and they were cutting weight. I gotta ask you, Isaac, because it was, even for us, that was a bizarre scene to show up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
There's these guys jumping rope and running, they're wearing their sweatsuits, their plastics, they're cutting weight. And then especially to know that there's Ian McCall cutting weight, knowing at this point it's not like a question anymore. I mean, he knows full well the fight's off. He's basically cutting weight to get his show money.
Yeah.
Was kind enough to allow us to come talk to him. It was a bizarre scene even for me, who's been doing this for a long time. What was your feelings? I mean, as we showed up, what was your thoughts? And then once we got there and seen it, what were your whole thoughts?
It was interesting, man. Because as we were walking in, I saw him from the distance, and I was like, oh, that's clearly the fight team, okay. And then I see a couple of guys, like two, three guys, like running laps around the fountain, and I see this one short dude in red sweatpants that are like half a darker shade of red. Like, I've had some tough days at the gym, but I was like, oh, he's just slathered in sweat. Holy crap. This dude is just shedding water like nobody's business.
Atlanta is hot and humid.
It is. And it's like 9:30, 10 p.m. It's like, it is not cooling off at all. And, it was interesting because, like you said, he's basically cutting weight for, to get a check. And partially he said something like for moral support for Cisco. Because Cisco's fight is still on, but he's
That's
still
a great fight.
He's going to make weight for 135, and he was saying Ian was saying, like, I probably wouldn't be pushing myself this hard if Cisco weren't here, and like I'm here for him too, and it was cool to see that team dynamic and everything. And then Ian McCall collapses after your interview and just kind of lays in the grass and stares up at the stars, and at one point asks me what the hell time it is, and I pull out my phone, it's like 10:05 or something like that. I'm like, this is Ian McCall laying on the ground in front of me. This is weird as hell. Because as a fan, I'm like, these are people who I only ever see on some screen or another, either my phone or my laptop or, the TV at B-Dubs, because that's where I watch everything. It was like, you guys included, too. It's a little weird seeing you guys in person. But there's Ian McCall, like, in several layers of sweats, just supine on the ground talking to us about his girlfriend and nonsense like that, and I won't go into those details.
That was a hell of a story. No.
Sorry, guys.
Not even on this podcast.
But
not ever. I could never speak of those stories.
Oh, man, that was great. That was so great. It was an interesting scene, and seeing his coaches and his reps' perspective on what on Scoggins, one of his coaches was just, we got there and immediately
angry.
You could tell he was in a
angry.
Foul mood.
Absolutely angry.
Just pissed. And you were trying to be all diplomatic about it. And it was like, well, yeah. It was like, God damn it, Scoggins. It's like basically shaking his fist at the air, like, Scoggins?
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. It really was. It was such a bizarre situation to know that the fight's off, to know that you missed more than likely half of your paycheck. We don't know yet for sure. We've been in contact with UFC officials. Now, by the time we get this podcast out, it may be official that he gets his win bonus, too. If he makes weight in the morning, Ian McCall will definitely get his show money. We don't know if he'll get his win bonus.
I hope he gets his damn win bonus. He hasn't fought in a long time.
It'd be nice, or at least to get him a big fight. I mean, I would have, Wilson Hayes is fighting earlier in the night against Hector Sandoval. That would have been an interesting way to put that fight together. But then you lose an extra fight. I mean, who knows what happens. But moments before he collapsed on the ground in absolute frustration, Ian McCall did give us his thoughts, and here they are. Well, Ian, we should say we're outside right now. You know very well that Justin Scoggins isn't going to fight. But you're out here making weight. Talk about what the emotion is like right now as you're making weight without a fight.
I'm getting paid, so cool. like the most expensive weight cut I've ever done. Whatever. I mean, as much as I like Justin, I want to be a dick, you know, and say something, but whatever. The weight cutting's not good for you, and if you don't do it right, and people, he's young, he's probably stupid, you know, about it. But he's a good fighter, so hopefully this won't tarnish his name too much. You know, it's weird that I feel bad for him, but this weight cutting shit's horrible for you, and I'm just getting it done because I'm getting paid. And I don't even think I should have to, but you know, it's part of the job.
Can you talk about the events this afternoon? I mean, we saw you just a few hours ago at Media Day. Obviously, you were preparing for a fight. What happened after that? How did it all unfold for you?
We left. I went back and ate. And then I got, you know, told what was going on. And I was like, fuck, okay. Whatever. It's always hurry up and wait. And then I find out that I still have to cut weight. So it's like, whatever. I'm just going on his plan.
He told us that he did ask, maybe would you be willing to fight at a catch weight? He said, you know, didn't want to do that. Can you explain your reasoning? I mean, obviously, you contracted to fight at flyweight, so you're not obligated to. But what was the thought process to say, no, you need to make flyweight?
Yeah, you need to make flyweight. End of story. I've already been screwed once, more than once in this situation, so I'm not going to do it again.
What do you want to do from here? I mean, I imagine, do you want to rebound a little bit and recover a little bit? Do you want to try to get booked again? What do you think makes the most sense?
I'd like to get booked at 202. It'd be cool. It's a big card. I think I deserve it.
A lot of people I see out there saying Wilson Hayes, yes, he did get a replacement opponent, but that would be probably the biggest fight on the table right now. Do you think that's a fight that makes sense for you?
I would love it. It would put me in a very quick short line to Demetrius.
All right, so that was Ian McCall. Again, kind of breaking news late at night, kind of became the story of the evening. Shame, because that was a fight that I really wanted to see. I will say this, another fight that I really want to see that's definitely flown under the radar as well, Matt Brown versus Jake Ellenberger. You know, it's interesting because both these guys have been on tough runs. Now, Matt Brown's been on a tough run facing elite-level competition. I mean, he's been facing the best of the best, but hasn't been able to pick up a win. Jake Ellenberger has had this string of losses that have been very, very tough to watch, to be honest with you, because I think not that long ago, Jake Ellenberger was an absolute beast. Mm-hmm. And I think somewhere along the lines, he started overthinking things, man. He really just quit becoming this physical specimen and really started overthinking things. And he says that that's thrown out the window, that he's going to come back in rare form. But, Isaac, I got to ask you, Matt Brown, Jake Ellenberger, is this a fight that you're looking forward to? And
you're right over there? You doing okay?
Excuse me. Do you have a read on it? Can we edit that out? We're not editing that out.
That's Morgan dies.
Can that go to the reel
the
at the end? No, does that go to the joke reel? Can we just? Wow, I almost choked on myself there. Do you have a read on this fight? Because I feel like Jake Ellenberger is kind of re-energized and he seems to be saying the right things, but he's had trouble. Matt Brown has had some trouble, but it's been against, again, the very best of the best. I'm really looking forward to this fight too. I think it's one that's got a lot of question marks.
It's an interesting one. It's like the dynamic I see is that Matt Brown will go in against anybody. He really doesn't. He's sort of I don't know if he's the Cerrone of welterweight. Well, Cerrone is a welterweight. Damn it, son of a bitch. But you know he likes challenges. Like that was his thing with the Damian Maia fight. He says he took that fight because it was a bad matchup. He loves that shit.
That's crazy, right?
He loves that shit, and he loves coming out to several thousand Brazilians and just flipping
them off.
they deserve
that was
it.
Great.
And so, I don't know. I have a feeling Brown wins this one. Mm. I don't know what to say about Jake Ellenberger, man. He seems to have. Because, like you said, he's saying all the right things, but he's also said the right things for a couple of his past fights. Like, what was his last win? The chokeout of Koscheck?
Yeah, it's been a while.
That was nuts. And so I don't know. I would hesitate to call Jake Ellenberger a head case, but he's kind of a head case. And so I don't know if Jake Ellenberger can get back to form. That's a hell of a form to get back to. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I see Brown winning this, and unless Ellenberger decides that body shots are the way to go. but yeah, that's basically it. Because Brown doesn't give a shit. He really doesn't.
He's the best. Cole Coffey, I know you're a Matt Brown homer. Obviously,
I O.
You're always favoring the Ohio guys.
I am. Yeah, don't even ask me because it's Brown.
It's Brown. Yeah.
It's Brown.
What a silly question. I guess what I was going to ask was Brown against Maya.
Yeah. Didn't you do that?
I did.
I was just going to ask you, in what round does Matt Brown score the knockout? No, but I got to ask
I'll
you.
I'll take it the second.
You were standing there with me when we talked to Jake Ellenberger today, and I think you know
he was
Jake,
in great moods. Great. Swords.
Jake is in a great mood, and I think he's always had you know he's always been very trusting of me, I guess, and I feel like he's always been very open and honest, and I feel like we were able to talk openly and just say, listen, man, I feel like you hesitate in there. I feel like you. You know, not that I'm, and I told him that I'm like, not that I'm some fighter. I mean, I'm not, but I feel like when I watch you that you're hesitating or I feel like you're thinking about it. And he was like, yeah, he's like the analyzing Jake Ellenberger is out the fucking window. Is exactly what he said.
That's
and,
great.
I don't know. I thought it was cool. Like, I mean, again, as you said, Isaac, you know, fighters can say the right thing, but as you were standing there in front of Jake Ellenberger, I mean, did you feel any different, even though knowing the whole time you were thinking, like, I'm a Matt Brown homer?
I actually wasn't thinking that. But, no, actually, I mean, because I'm kind of like Isaac. You know, I think when I first started seeing Jake, or maybe it was you that was mentioning it, I was completely just like, this guy is a beast, man. He's doing some great stuff. And then he just kind of got away from it. I think he got cautious, and I think that's true. He probably did get up into his head and was thinking too much as opposed to just reacting to the moment. But I think he realizes that, you know, he's kind of, even though he probably has more, and I'm not sure what his current contract is right now, but, I mean, there's even no guarantee that you ever make it to the end of your contract. I think he realizes that he needs to perform, and the only way he's going to do it is to get back to his old form. So, yeah, if he says it, and this is the perfect fight for it, because if he thinks he needs to go out there and stand and bang, Brown is the perfect person to do that with. To at least be a willing partner. I don't think he's the perfect person to stand and bang with because I think that's going to be a mistake. But I look forward to that because I think, if anything, if he's going to come out, we might see one of the most exciting first rounds of the night, you know, in this particular fight. Do I think it's probably going to steal the fight of the night? No, you know, or be the most exciting, but I think it's going to be pretty darn exciting. I'm interested to see it. But, yeah, it rang true when he was saying, because I think he's at a point where he's pushed against the wall. He needs to have one of those performances because I think people are starting, I wouldn't really say deem him irrelevant, but I think he's really getting near the point where a lot of people are just, he's not in the discussion anymore.
No, you're right.
And I think he wants to get back in that conversation. The only way he's going to do that is to really wow people over. So he's got to go for it. So maybe he does. Maybe he's ready to stop thinking about it and just realize that, you know, I mean, we've seen fighters go out there and that they realize that, hey, if I go out there and I put it all and I might get finished, I might get whatever, but if it's exciting, I'm going to get asked back. You know, maybe if you get knocked out 3 or 4 times in a row, you're not going to get asked back. But, you know, as long as the fans are happy and they're asking for you to fight, the UFC is going to keep pushing you in there. And right now, I think Jake is working to get back to that point. He realizes if he goes in there and he does give him those exciting fights, he's always going to have a position there. And I think he wants to be back in the discussion, and there's only one way to do that. But getting a win over Matt Brown would definitely throw him back into the mix of things. Do I think it's going to happen?
Of course you don't.
Oh, you know, I owe. I'm the most biased individual. And I'll be honest, whether it's true or not, but I am, you know.
I am a Texas homer, Lone Star State, but it pales in comparison to the way you hang in with the Buckeye State. You mentioned fight of the night. I think originally, to be honest with you, I think that was going to be Scoggins and McCall. I think now Eric Perez and Francisco Rivera has a good chance.
That could
be
a good one.
I think that's going to be a great fight. But I did want to say I did have a chance also to speak with Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler, Tyron Woodley might be a decent little fight as well.
It might be all right.
You know, he was okay today at the open workouts, or excuse me, the Ultimate Media Day. But I had a chance to talk to him on the phone last week, and I found him to be in pretty jovial spirits. We actually had a chance to talk about Conor McGregor and Taking of Souls. We also had a chance to talk about George St. Pierre as well. You know, GSP is always talking about coming back. Would Robbie Lawler like that fight? We talked about that. And, of course, we talked about Tyron Woodley as well. So as we freshen up on these frosty beverages here in Atlanta, check out Robbie Lawler, the ruthless one. Hey, Mr. Lawler, how you doing, sir?
I'm good.
Fantastic. All right, let's get into it, man. I want to ask you first. I mean, I know that as champion, your job is to just fight whoever comes your way, but I did want to know what your initial thoughts were when it was Woodley, because there were a lot of debate whether or not he really was the number one contender. So when they said, hey, it's Woodley, what did you think?
It's whatever. Just get to work and figure out a way to get the job done and start building.
Do you take a look at the landscape and try to guess, you know, who's going to come next for you or think about that at all? Or do you really just sit back and just say, whatever?
You want me to, like, look at all the scenarios and figure it out and see what ifs and worry about stuff that might not happen, you mean?
Well, not when you put it like that. I guess not.
Yeah, it's kind of silly, right?
It does.
You just kind of just worry about one day at a time, and whoever they put in front of you is who they put in front of you, and you just go to work.
That's awesome. You know, you obviously when you were fighting in Strikeforce, you were middleweight, and he was fighting in welterweight. But did he ever catch your eye over there? I mean, when you were in Strikeforce, did you see him fight, and did you ever, you know, were you a fan of him? Did you ever think it might be an opponent? I mean, did you follow his career at all?
No, I've obviously seen him fight just like I've seen a lot of people fight. He's very technical, very athletic, and has a lot of potential and a lot of abilities. Yeah, he's just a really good fighter. I watched a lot of fighters. So.
And are you a guy that once you do have a target, I mean, do you break down tape and really study a guy, or are you more just kind of going there and see what happens?
A little bit. I break down a little bit of tape just so I can get a feeling, but I let my coaches do most of the game planning and watching of the tapes, and then I just go from there.
What's your feeling on Tyron? Because, I mean, you've been fighting the best in the world. There's no doubt about it. I mean, is he on that level? Is he one of the best guys in the world?
Right now, I'm going to treat him like he is. I got to treat him like he's the best guy I've ever fought, and that's my mindset. I feel like he's going to be the best he's ever been before, so that's what I'm preparing for. I'm preparing for someone who's going to try to do great things, so I need to push myself to do amazing things.
That's well said. You know, I wonder, is there any part of you that wishes this was a Conor McGregor fight? I mean, it was rumored, and, you know, just the sheer money and attention of it. It seemed like a silly fight, to be honest with you. I can't imagine him standing in there with you. But was there any part of you that just for the money of it and the attention of it that was thinking, gosh, I hope I get this Conor McGregor fight?
Not really. Maybe the money is definitely something that I'd be interested in, but, like, the attention, no. Money is always nice. Attention's like, yeah, whatever. But I wasn't too worried about the fight. I didn't really concentrate too much on that. UFC never said anything about that possibly being an opponent, so I didn't really think much of it.
You had that awesome quote, though, when you were doing the Atlanta media tour where you said you would have taken his soul. Did you imagine that quote was going to get that much attention as it was? I mean, just being a local Atlanta TV station, I mean, people seem to latch onto that and really love it, man.
Yeah, it was kind of funny, some of the memes they put together. I didn't even realize it was that big until I was done with my day, about to go out to eat, and I started getting calls and text messages about it, and I didn't even know what anyone was talking about.
So you got a kick out of it, though. You enjoyed it as much as we did, seeing the little memes and stuff.
Yeah, the memes were funny.
No doubt. The other guy I wanted to ask you about, I mean, I know you're focused on Tyron Woodley, but, you know, George St. Pierre keeps teasing a comeback, and I wonder if – I mean, it sounds like you don't think about possibilities, and that makes a lot of sense because you can't control him, but when you hear his name, do you at least get a little bit excited? Because I wonder if that would mean something to you. I mean, there's nobody doubting your legitimacy as a champion. There's nobody doubting, you know, what you've accomplished, but would that be a little extra notch for you to be able to welcome him back and to beat him?
No, I don't really get too excited, but yeah, that'd be nice to beat him and showcase my skills against him, but I don't think he's coming back. Wouldn't be a smart move for him. He's done a lot for the sport, and he's won a lot of fights, and I'm not the guy I think he wants to come back against.
That is true. That is true. Well, you know, you've had these back-to-back Fight of the Year performances. I know that you can't keep putting your body through those, as fun as they are for us to watch. So when you look at Tyron Woodley, I mean, is this a guy you think you can put away and not have to do these five grueling rounds? Or are you preparing to go through another one of those hellacious five-round Fight of the Year type fights?
Yeah, I'm always preparing for the worst, expecting the best, but we'll see what happens. I don't really look too much into it. I can just do my best, and I'm always trying to knock somebody out and get it done with fast, so that's always the game plan, and sometimes my opponents just don't fall down for me.
I'm curious, if things do go your way, I mean, are you thinking about the future at all? I mean, would you like to fight again this year? Is there, you know, a name out there? People are saying Demian Maia and Carlos Condit might be determining a number one contender. Is there a future plan, or do you, you know, just stop the planning past July 30th at this point?
Yeah, pretty much July 30th. Got to make weight and then go out there and be clicking on all cylinders. And that's pretty much all I concentrate on right now. And keep it simple.
Awesome, Robbie. Well, I know you got a bunch of these, man, so I appreciate the time. Any other last thoughts, messages, anything like that we can get out there for you?
Nope.
Awesome. All right, Robbie, thank you very much. We look forward to seeing the fight.
All right, take it easy.
You got it, man.
Thanks, John.
No worries. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was ruthless Robbie Lawler. It's going to be a good fight. I'm telling you what. I wasn't that hyped about it when they announced it, but I'm hyped about it now. And it's getting closer. It's getting closer. In fact, what's really getting closer is the official weigh-ins, which we're now allowed to cover for the first time ever. We have been told we're cleared. We can live tweet it. We can take pictures. We can do video. The UFC has been trying to figure this out, what they want to do. I think they finally realized there's just nothing they can do to control it. They wanted to keep the results. They wanted to control the results if they could, because they wanted to keep the sanctity of the weigh-in show. And it's just not going to be possible, because the commissions will release the weights early. The fighters can just – I mean, journalists can stand out in the hallway and ask for the fucking weights, and they'll just give it to them, and that's that.
Connections, just –
Exactly. There's just nothing you can do. I think the one thing that it, you know, because the UFC is going to have to revamp these weigh-in shows somehow. Like, for instance, guys and gals, you don't need to strip down to your underwear when you're not actually weighing in. Like, if you want to take your shirt off so you get the cool picture, do that.
I don't know. I bet if you ask some of the fighters, like, if they want to, I think it's their time to show off. It's like, look, I'm ripped. Look at this.
Honestly, they might take the pants.
I mean, if they take the shirts off, they take the pants off. I mean, they're still showing the top or whatever, unless they're really like, look at my
thighs,
quads and my glutes.
You might have something there. You know? Keep the shorts on.
Look at that guy that was out of the pool today in his white Speedo. They could just be like,
oh, God, he was out there for hours.
Everything.
Like, it was like he decided to vacation.
We kind of overlooked the pool right here.
So you couldn't look away?
No.
You're like, are we in Italy all of a sudden? I thought we got transported over into Greece or Italy or something.
Bro.
But it made me think, like,
and there's a dude with a white Speedo at the pool that we're overlooking. Of course you can't look away.
Oh, yeah.
You can't look away.
It was interesting.
Well, so they're going to have to revamp the weigh-ins a little bit. I do think the one thing about the weigh-ins that's still cool, so what we're kind of saying is the official weigh-ins are in the morning. The ceremonial weigh-ins are in the afternoon.
Ritual.
What do you call it?
I think it's a ritual now.
The ritual?
It's tradition. It's now ritual. It's now part of, like, obviously it's meaningless. It's just ornamentation.
But here's the part that's not meaningless. Okay. When the two fighters come together.
The face-off, to me,
still means something. Like, I get it. The part on the scale, that doesn't mean anything anymore. And it's almost embarrassing that we pretend. That's why I hate the part that they strip down. Like, bro, come on, dude. We already have the weights. I mean, they almost don't even need to come on the scale anymore, to be honest with you. I mean, to me, I think it would be okay if they were just like, you know, somebody announced them, like, and first up, Tyron Woodley, and Tyron walks out, and he's just
– maybe there's a podium there instead of a scale.
Yeah, maybe a podium and just, like, you know, shows off or does whatever. I mean, if he wants to have his shirt off, whatever. Next up, Robbie Lawler. Lawler comes out, does whatever, you know, points to people, does whatever he wants to do, and then they come together. And that, to me, the part where they're face-to-face, nose-to-nose, eye-to-eye, that still means something. That still means something.
It's true.
Just my thoughts. Just my thoughts.
Yeah.
All right, a couple other things I want to talk about real quick this week, earlier that happened. We did on Wednesday. We came in a little bit early. There was nothing scheduled on Wednesday, so we just scheduled our own media day. I want to say we talked to George Masvidal, Michael Graves, Damian Brown, Ross Pearson. Appreciate their time because we were literally the only media that was doing anything that day, so we were the only ones doing anything. Ross Pearson. Ross Pearson, who's fighting at welterweight, was supposed to be on vacation. He lost the fight to Will Brooks, of course, on International Fight Week, and was supposed to be hanging out and having a great time with his wife and his essentially a newborn baby. I mean, that kid is like 12 weeks old, I think at this point. And he decided,
already traveled around the world.
They live in Australia. They live in Australia. This baby lives in Australia, 12 weeks old, already has a passport, already a couple stamps on it. And basically he said, you know what, he was frustrated and said, I want to fight again. They were like, well, dude, if you want to, we got this fight. He's supposed to be chilling with his wife and kid and says, hell yeah, I'll take a fight. And we had a chance to interview him, which is cool. But Cole Coffey, he halfway insulted your mother.
No, it's true. It's true. I brought it up. I kind of threw her out there a little bit. But
were you antagonizing him?
Well, no. He goes on, and John will tell it better. He goes on to tell a story of a trip that he takes to a coffee shop.
Mm. Well, don't let me tell it. Let's just let Ross tell it.
Just to like come up to you and just like, it's hilarious. Can I hold you? Can I hold your baby?
My mom does that shit all the time. I'm
really?
Like, Mom, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think as women, you know, and especially maybe if they had kids, like I don't know when it happened. My mom became that woman.
Oh, really?
And like, so she'll come up and like, start talking like she's like a fucking baby magnet. I'm just like, Mom, what are you doing? I'm like, you're so embarrassing. And now when I see her, like,
just, your mom doesn't live in California, does she?
So, Ross Pearson approached at a coffee shop, asked if someone can hold his baby. Now, Fiasco Jones, a.k.a. Marty Anonymous, a.k.a. female employee, a.k.a. not a video editor, as somebody that is a mother slash and or father of a child, can you imagine?
Hermaphrodite now? I mean, get your story straight.
Can you imagine if somebody came up and asked you with your kid at 12 weeks, can I hold your baby?
Well, you don't know my baby. Well, I mean,
Sol Invictus.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. Okay. AKA maybe not Sol Invictus.
Yes.
But potentially.
Right.
If that was
the light
a name,
of Ophiuchus. Potentially Sol Invictus or not. If someone came and said, "Can I hold him?" I would say, "Of course." I know why you want to, because you want to get close to the Messiah. You want to get close. You want to get close to the source of all life. That's what you want to do. You want to have this near you. I would not fault someone for doing that. They could probably see the beacon of light miles away, and it's drawing them to them. They finally see it. Can I hold? I'd be like, I'd respectfully decline, but I wouldn't be very mad.
So you're saying the UFO lights, the streaming lights over Vegas the other night was actually just reflection?
It was a sign. It wasn't a reflection. It was a sign of Ophiuchus. It was one of the serpents. He cast it down. It's a sign that we need to get our lives right, people. We need to get our lives straight because the signs are happening. The serpent is crashing toward Earth in the multicolored rainbow.
That you can't see.
I can't see.
Well,
just one layer of it.
I can see the yellows.
The purple layer.
I can see the yellows and the oranges. If there's any purple in it, that's obviously not a real layer. That's the lie. That's the lie in the sky. Don't believe that.
All right, I don't want to tell anybody what time it is in the morning right now, but I can just tell
it's
you
late.
That we might be rolling in hot to the weigh-ins, whether the official weigh-ins. Mm. I did want to say one other story. Damian Brown, he wouldn't talk about it on camera. We had met him in Australia when he made his debut in Brisbane on short notice, and we knew that he worked in the prison system. In fact, I think at the time they just said it was kind of like he worked in the local jail. That ain't exactly right. And he wouldn't talk about it on camera. In fact, we were kind of speaking openly, and a couple of times he's like, that camera's off, right? That camera's off.
The camera was off. The mixer was on.
Right.
Shady.
I'm just kidding. I deleted everything. But it's a true story.
Damian, and you know, obviously this is a big fight for him. He lost his debut. If you go 0-2 in the UFC, especially if you're not somebody that comes in with a stellar track record, you know, this amazing backstory, like you could be 2-and-done. And I think he knows that. But I just want to say that, like, this guy's story is incredible. It's not – he doesn't kind of work in the jail system, whatever. Like, this dude works in, like –
He is the jail system?
Yeah, he actually incarcerates people himself. No, he actually works in, like, a maximum security prison. And not only does he work in a maximum security prison, he works in, like, the wing where they, like, put people in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
And they put him there in solitary confinement for, like, months at a time or whatever. And, you know, he talked about I just can't say everything he talked about it because then he might as well talk about it. But he basically was sharing some stories the way it was and kind of comparing it to the U.S. prison system or whatever. But, I mean, obviously you have respect for anybody that works, you know, in kind of law enforcement and that sort of thing. I mean, that's not an easy job to have. And he even mentioned it, like, you know, how tough it is. Like, some people, especially in that line of work, like, they take it home. Like, it just, you know, takes their whole life over or whatever. And how he tries to strike a healthy balance. But – I don't know. I mean, I like the guy already as a person. He's fun to talk to. But then learning that level about him, man, like hearing him tell stories, like, this dude's the real deal.
Yeah,
super impressive.
I feel
like you're also kind of segueing into the origin story of a superhero like the Punisher, like his real true story. And you can't talk about it openly, but this guy is fighting crime. You can tell us.
I'll tell you what I'm segueing into is anybody that didn't think that this guy has the greatest story ever told, now you've had a little bit of a taste. If you –
just a glimpse of what's to come at episode 100.
Just a glimpse.
I would ask for another promo, but it would go for another 10 minutes.
It would, and we've got to edit, and then we've got to edit, get a cup of warm coffee, and basically just go straight over to the official weigh-ins.
Shake it off, buddy. Shake it off.
I'm going to have to nap.
If anybody's there at the official weigh-ins and smells frosty beverages somewhere, I promise. It's not from us.
Editing the podcast.
This will be the first time ever we will have live results. We will have photos. We'll have video of people actually stepping on the scale at the early morning weigh-ins. We'll try to start doing that from now moving forward as long as the UFC and the athletic commissions are okay with that. We'll have to figure out how that works into the podcast schedule because that kind of totally screwed things up for us. Friday used to be a late start. It's not a late start anymore. And if this is any indication of what's to come,
there will be no MMA Radio 100. And my prophecy will be there. There we go.
And and more than anything, of course, the most important thing is just thanks for listening. No, of course not. You don't even have headphones on. Why would you be rolling? Sorry about that.
Fucking
Magoose.
Now we gotta bring. Let me put the female voice.
Put the female voice modulator
back on.
Hello, everybody.
I do need to crank the volume down again.
Give us some lovin's. Oh, yeah.
You'd be the worst female ever.
You're just your own Monday morning talk show like sound recording.
Yeah. My voice is garbage, but my body's rocking.
You should give a teaser. We want a teaser to the greatest story ever told.
You want a teaser? You want a teaser? Here's his teaser. 100 episodes! Here it comes! The best story ever told! What is it in Dragons? No! Earthquakes! Hellfire? No! Even better! Better, better, better. 10 times better. Isaac Kennedy was not there, but he wish he was. Honestly, my life was changed. Kenny wasn't even around. The cold coffee wasn't around. His life was changed. He could feel it in the hellhole of Ohio where he was trapped. His life was changing, and he felt the – he's like – that's when he got the call. I was like, UFC.
They said, we have someone you need to replace. We need to replace this.
He could feel the legend happening from Ohio, that dank cesspool. He made the call because of this story. Because things were changing. Honestly, it is the demarcation point of an era. There was before the story, and there's after the story, and nothing's ever been the same since.
30 more weeks.
There's my blooper section at the end right there.
Done.
The blooper section is now a promo.
Done. All right, we're good to roll.
Just edits itself.